Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
And of course, now that breaking news regarding the ICE report. But very, very happy that our next guest is here. And I want to welcome to the program by playing his trailer for his new movie. The movie is called Vindicating Trump. You know the name Dinesh D'Souza quite well. He's written a number of books that you probably read. You've seen several of his movies. And without further ado, here is the trailer for his new movie, Vindicating Trump, which is in theaters starting today.
Somebody has to help this country, and if they don't, the country and the world are in big trouble.
Someone's got to overturn the tables in the temple.
Trump jumping into the presidential race.
She's a bit worried.
Of the Apprentice guy?
You know the feeling of power. Could you handle it or would it devour?
They fear that power. You didn't do an insurrection. Had you called for one, there would have been one. Mm-hmm. And there would be one if you called for one now.
I'm not sure I want that power. I want the power just to make the country better.
America first!
And that scares them.
A lot about Donald Trump scares them.
Let's look at everything. Campaign, his family. Let's get foreign eyes on him.
We have one target. You know who he is.
Going after their companies, their families. That is a dictator.
It's a very dangerous time for our country.
The goal is to put him in jail because they're so afraid of his voice.
I am your voice.
We'll bury him so deep in legal, it'll bankrupt them.
Broke got him in jail right before the election.
That's sorry for being that guy, but isn't that election interference?
It's not interference if we do it.
We just want a free and fair election.
Sounds expensive.
Ballots ain't cheap.
Wait. Did you actually say the word buy the ballots?
We were able to purchase 10,000 ballots.
That's terrifying.
They cheat in many different ways. That's all they're good at.
Ready to save democracy?
We need to stop him permanently.
And that person will be risking his life.
Too bad it's not the 60s, right?
It's the way you survived.
I said, get me up.
Trump has beaten back every attack against him.
It's like the damn tourney.
We're going to fix our borders, and we're going to fix our elections. We're going to win.
This is my legacy.
Vindicating Trump.
The best is yet to come.
Only in theaters September 27th.
Here to talk about it with me is Dinesh D'Souza himself. Hello, Dinesh. How are you?
Hey, great to join you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No, absolutely. Congratulations on the movie. And it's actually in theaters, which is very, very cool, because I'm a big believer in going to see movies in theaters. I like it. I like to do it.
Yeah, I make them for the theaters. You know, the last couple of films, Police State and 2000 Mules, it was a post-COVID theatrical environment. Things were a little bit messed up, so I did these buyouts. I wasn't able to do a normal theatrical release, so I'm delighted. The film's in 850 theaters all over the country. The website, by the way, just vindicatingtrump.com. So if you plug in your city or your town, it'll pop up all the theaters where it's playing. Do see it this weekend if you can.
Yeah, look, it's going to be a rainy weekend in our area. It's perfect time for it. And movie theater popcorn is the best. So it's a perfect combination, in my opinion, Dinesh D'Souza. I mean that, really. You cannot duplicate movie theater popcorn. I can, but most people can't duplicate it at home. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's true of the movie, too. You know, you can watch it on your computer. You can watch it even on your big screen TV. But I make these films with a lot of cinematic drama.
Good.
There are a lot of recreations in the movie that are very entertaining. In fact, laugh out loud at times. And the centerpiece of the film is a very sort of intimate one-on-one with Trump, in which I try to bring out aspects of Trump's personality and character, even his soul, that are not normally on display in public. And I'm happy to say I think that works. So this is an exciting film, a timely one. Of course, it's a very urgent time for the country. And the film also, by the way, dramatizes all the different ways that they've been trying to get Trump. Character assassination, political assassination, legal assassination, and of course now two actual assassination attempts.
Yeah, and that really kind of goes with your last production, which is Police State, which I loved. And I've been saying for years this country has become a police state, because that is the and you do a great job of defining that. But, you know, when the government uses its law enforcement for political purposes, and we're seeing that. And so as we think about vindicating Trump, they're trying to stop him in every single way. Why?
You know,
why do they want to stop him so badly?
It reminds me a little bit, before I came to America, I lived in India, and I had very little exposure to America, except through movies. And my favorite genre was the Western. Now, I want to tell you, you know, the plot of the typical Western, because I think it encapsulates our situation almost with eerie precision. You know, you have a town, everything's going really well, it's sort of Pleasantville, or it's called Shinbone, something like that, and then some ruthless gangsters come in, and they take over the place. They make the town into a police state, and they terrify everybody. They subdue the old sheriff, and the place is just not the same and will never be the same again, except, and this is where the plot takes off, a stranger arrives, Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, a lone cowboy comes over the mountain. And not a lot is known about this guy. This is basically Donald Trump. But here's the key point. The gangsters recognize right away that this guy is a threat. They don't have to worry about the townsmen. They don't have to worry about the old sheriff with his 80-year-old rifle. They have to worry about this newcomer. And so they set about, they try to buy him off. They try to get him to leave. They try to beat him up. They ultimately try to kill him. But they know that this is the one guy who could take their whole operation down. I think this is really why the Democrats are fixated on Trump. He's a larger-than-life figure. He was a massive cultural celebrity even before he got into politics. And he has the kind of resolve and bravery. I mean, look at his reaction to the two assassination attempts. I mean, what normal person reacts that way? So this is a guy with steely courage. And his enemies, of all people, recognize that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the key point. And those enemies also want to stop him from coming back because he does have such courage in the face of all this. I mean, going back to Butler next week, I think is just a badass move. Don't you, Dinesh D'Souza?
Well, I mean, yeah, look at the second assassination attempt. I mean, first of all, who says when they come and tell you the Secret Service, hey, there's a man two holes down who's been, you know, planning to kill you, and you go, guys, stop it. You know, I'm in the middle of my golf game. I'm about to make an amazing shot, and you're, like, pulling me off the course. Then yeah. You go to social media, Trump does, and he posts 0-2. I mean, he's keeping score. So what I'm getting at is this is just, I cannot think of anyone in the world who would really react in this way. And then when I think about the 91 criminal charges, I mean, any other Republican facing two criminal charges would have exited the race, fled the field, never be heard from again. So Trump, in that sense, is a larger-than-life figure, a very scary guy. In a field of Republicans, by and large, who are pretty weak-kneed, and none of them really, the Democrats aren't scared of Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney. They know how to handle those guys. They don't know how to handle Trump.
And in this movie, you have one of my favorite actors, Nick Searcy, who's back again playing in one of your movies, Dinesh D'Souza. He's fantastic. And is he the bad guy in this?
Of course. You know, he was a bad guy in Police State, and he's back. He's sort of the head of the defense intelligence agencies, and he's scheming against Trump. You know what's really interesting is we shot a recreation, and this was before the assassination attempt, and Nick Searcy is actually talking about, you know, he's like, I wonder what we can do to get rid of this guy permanently. So he has a little chessboard, and he knocks the king over. So eerily, we anticipated this. I mean, there's no way we could have shot it. We interviewed Trump after the assassination attempt, but there's no way we could have shot those recreations. We shot them before. They turn out to be eerily prophetic. You watch this film, it looks like I completed it yesterday. It's so timely, so plugged into current events.
You've been a victim yourself of the government going after you and trying to shut you down and silence you. You're very familiar with this, Dinesh D'Souza. Am I right?
In a small way. I mean, to be honest, you know, when my case first came about, I did not realize it was a prelude to what would happen to Carter Page, Michael Flynn, Papadopoulos, obviously ultimately Trump. I just thought it was sort of, I had ticked off Obama because I'd made that film, Obama's America. But looking back, yes, this was a small window into a lot of the tightening of the noose of the police state that would come in subsequent years, mainly under Biden.
But also, everyday Americans have felt the intimidation as well. I mean, my favorite moment, I mean, I don't say favorite in a positive way, but the one that stands out to me the most is when that Merrick Garland school board's letter went out to parents. And this is where I think Trump empathizes with people, and people can empathize with him. Because a lot of parents feel targeted by, whether it's people on social media or it's their own company, they're afraid to speak out on things. You know, you have the FBI basically say, if you speak out at a school board meeting, the attorney general say, the FBI might come for you. I mean, that's intimidation tactics of the utmost degree, which you've covered before. But one of the things that Trump says all the time, which I think resonates with people, is, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you. I'm just standing in their way. I think that works for him.
Absolutely. In some ways, if we think back to that iconic scene where Trump comes down the escalator at Trump Tower, this is 2015, he's first running for president. This is kind of how I think about it. At the top of the escalator, you've got all the cultural elites, and they used to love Trump. He was one of them. They praised him to the sky. They want to be photographed with him. But then Trump makes a really fateful decision. He gets on the escalator. He goes down. He descends. And who does he descend to? Well, at the bottom of the escalator, I kind of envision the forgotten Americans. I mean, these are the guys who've gotten screwed over. Their jobs have been traded away. Their standard of living has not improved. And here's Trump, and he's really not one of them, but he decides to take up their cause. And this is why they are so fanatically loyal to him. Meanwhile, the cultural elites, the Oprah Winfreys of the world, who are at the top of the escalator, they see Trump as a traitor. Trump is sort of committing treason against his class. He's joining the pitchfork people. He's taking up their cause against the cultural elites. So here in a single snapshot, you can almost understand why there are people who are devoted to Trump and why some of the people who used to love Trump turned so ruthlessly and hatefully against him.
When you're making a movie, and a lot of people on our side of the political aisle, Dinesh D'Souza, hate Hollywood, and I understand that. But like I said, I think it's important to see movies in theaters. They pay a lot of local taxes. They employ people. They're good for jobs. We don't want theaters closing. Those would be big empty spaces. When you're making a movie, do you find that there are, you have the Hollywood actors who are, a lot of them are lefties, not people like Nick Searcy, of course, but a lot of them are. But the guys and gals who actually work on the movie, who build the sets and do the stuff, they're with us, right?
Yeah, and I would go further. People don't realize that the theater chains are not, in fact, part of Hollywood. In fact, I would put it this way. Theaters are really in the real estate business. They're in the business of filling seats. Hollywood is in the movie production business. Essentially, we are a virtual studio that is just not based in Hollywood, but uses the same distribution that Hollywood does. And look, this is my eighth documentary film. We've had very successful films. We've made probably $100 million in the box office. So
wow.
The theater chains like us. They're like, hey, you know how to fill seats. And that's what we're doing. So it's actually very nice for me to find a way to do an end run, not only around the mainstream media, but also around digital censorship. Because they can block me a little bit on Facebook, they can restrict me on YouTube, but they can't stop people from going to the theater.
No, they can't. And they can't stop me from sneaking in a bottle of wine. That's for another show. Vindicating Trump is the website. Vindicating Trump in theaters today, September 27th. Character assassination, political assassination, legal assassination, and actual assassination attempt. They will try anything to stop Trump. We can't let them. Dinesh D'Souza, thank you for joining me here in Philadelphia. Best of luck with the movie. I know it's going to be a big success.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Cioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
Yes, and we'll be live at the Grand Hotel Friday, October 11th, 2 weeks from today. So make sure you're there for it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's also Columbus Day weekend, so you might want to make a weekend getaway out of it, too. It's a fun time to go. Beautiful time of year in Cape May. Beautiful. And the crowds are gone, and it'll be a lot of fun. So Friday, October 11th, 3 to 7 p.m., fifth floor ballroom. You don't need a ticket to come. You just come on, show up, and stay for as long as you like. Stay for the whole show. Stay for a little bit. Up to you. We'd love to see you. The bar will be open. The bar will be open. That's for sure. The Zioli Army loves to party. It's great. Speaking of movies, Dinesh D'Souza said that they've been filling seats. And I was shocked, shocked to find gambling in here when I read a story in my formerly pangolin-stained fingers. Disney cuts 300 corporate staffers in the latest wave of layoffs. That's right, Disney, woke Disney. And I'm shocked by that because with all the great quality stuff they've been putting out lately, and with the indoctrination of your kids, and with the way that they've made the parks so reasonable for families, I'm shocked that they're doing $7.5 billion in cost cutting. I mean, who said go woke, go broke? Whoever could have thought that could possibly happen? Am I right? What was the latest one too? They had the new show that just came out. It's Agatha All Along. I know we didn't play that clip, but they were like, this is the gayest show ever or something like that, right? Wasn't it, Matt? Because all witches are gay or something. Do you remember
correct.
That?
I can find. Yeah, we have the clip. Give me like 2 seconds and I'll grab
it. Yeah, find it. I think that's what it was. They're like, this is the gayest movie ever. It's like, can you just make something good? Like, can you just do something good? Make something good. All right, stop making everything with a freaking message, but that it's political and just makes people mad. You know what I mean? Now, I will say Inside Out 2 was a very good movie, and that was a very family-friendly movie, but that's Pixar, and Pixar is kind of, they still manage to stay a little separate from Disney. Marvel and everything associated with it has been utter garbage ever since Iron Man snapped his fingers and gave it all to save humanity in Avengers Endgame. Hawkeye was pretty good. Falcon and the Winter Soldier was pretty good, too. But beyond that, everything is stunk. Bad.
And Star Wars as well.
Oh, and Star Wars. Don't even get me started on Star Wars. Don't even get me started on that steaming pile of... I even forgot about Star Wars. It's so bad. So bad. What was the last one they made? It was what was the name of the apprentice?
The Acolyte.
The Acolyte. Yeah, that stunk. I didn't watch it, but everybody said it was terrible. Did you see it?
I watched about half an episode, and that was all I could stomach.
That's all
that,
I could deal with, right,
it was
Justin?
Done. Yeah. Never touched it again.
Yeah, a steaming. It's terrible. So I'm shocked that they're $7.5 billion in cuts. 300 suits got laid off. I hope all those suits are responsible in some way, shape, or form for causing Disney, and by Disney I mean all of it, the whole thing, to be such a gigantic unfamily-friendly operation. Because from the theme parks where they charge you $5 for a freaking ice cube. See, now Justin and Kirk, you guys don't know this story because you were not on the show. DeSantis knows this story. Disney, when I went there with the kids, I got a drink, and I wanted an ice cube in it, and they charged me $4.25 for a round ball of ice. And I said to them, do I get to keep the water? Because that's my property now, right? So, I mean, when I'm done drinking this, whatever's left in that glass, can you bag it up for me? Because I may want to refreeze it when I get home. $4.25 for freaking ice. Ice cube. That's right. Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah, because they explained to me how, because since it's an ice ball, so I wanted a bourbon. I was with the kids all day on the rides, and you're miserable. And so I go, I need a drink. And I sat down. And I go, and I'd like it with a big ice cube. And they go, well, you know, for the big ice, we have to charge you. I said, why? It's water. I don't understand. If a glass of water is free when you freeze it, why is there suddenly a charge now? Like, well, it's the process by which we turn it into a ball of ice. So what is it like the sorcerer from Fantasia that's using magic powers, or is it just a freezer you've already paid for? Huh?
Wow.
I was so infuriated by that, but I was still so annoyed by having to wait online and all the other nonsense that I wound up paying the $4.25. But to this day, that really burns me. You know what I mean? Oh, and guess what it tasted like? Ice. Freaking ice. Yeah. It tasted like frozen water. Shocking. This is Sasheer Zamata on the carpet for Marvel's new Agatha All Along. Take a listen.
That Agatha is the gayest project Marvel has ever done. Agree?
I would agree with that, yeah.
Why is it?
You'll see. You'll see when you watch it. But, you know, I think witches are queer inherently just because we are outcast and, like, set aside for many reasons. And I think this show shows a really good representation of different types of people, and that we can all use the power we have in it within to, like, go forth and be great.
We need to add the W now, so it's got to be LGBTQ+IAW for witches. Huh? You want to be inclusive. You gotta have the W. So it's now officially LGBTQIA+W, every letter of the alphabet. Okay? But we're gonna make the W really stand out. Hell, why doesn't the W go first? Why does the L have to go first? It's not an alphabetical order. Maybe it's time it should. I don't know. I'm just saying. Maybe it's time to move some of the letters around. Maybe you could start with the B and then the S at the beginning of all of it. I'm just, again, throwing it out there. Witches. Does somebody want to let her know witches aren't real, or did we not want to have that conversation? Do you want to just save that for another day? Just that for another day? Just wait on that one? All right, why don't we wait on that? Because, you know, people thinking witches were real led to a lot of people dying during the Salem witch trials. I just want to do my part for humanity to make sure that doesn't happen again, because people start thinking witches are real. All right? So somebody tell this idiot that they're not real. It's a freaking character in a show. Can someone do that for me? Matt DeSantis, get on the phone. Before we have the Salem witch trials happen again, can we do that?
Yeah, you might be spoiling the season finale for all we know.
Please, stupid. How many people died during the Salem witch trials? I don't know. I have no idea, but probably a lot. That's all I know. Probably a lot. Oh, and they're indoctrinating our kids in every single possible way. Here's CNN. CNN with our children, having our children go out there and say how many times they found Democrat-leaning children are 9 times more likely to have extreme political opinions than Republican-leaning children. I'll tell you the truth. You want to know the truth? Here's what it is. In our family, Bridget and I teach our children to respect people's opinions and to respect and to understand there were 110,000 deaths during the Salem witch trial. Holy cow, that's a lot of people that died. That's a lot of deaths. Oops.
Scratch that. 110,000 people were tried for witchcraft. 40,000 to 60,000 were ultimately executed.
Do you know that the back then, the Morgan and Morgan of the day would try, like, have you been accused of witchcraft? Call me. We are the nation's largest witch accusation firm. Don't go into your witch trial unrepresented. You see the billboards they had back then? I think David Gelman, the David Gelman of his time, had one that says, just because you're a witch doesn't mean you're guilty. I think he had that at the time.
They got the Big Lou. Big Lou's like you. He's a witch, too.
Well, he provided life insurance for a lot of them, you know. Are you a witch and you're on your second witch trial? Well... Because what would they would do? They would tie you up, right, and throw you in the water. This is terrible. I feel like we're making jokes about this, but they would tie you up, throw you in the water, and if you came out, they knew you were a witch, and they'd kill you anyway. So you had no chance of getting out if they convicted you. Isn't that what happened? Unless you had a really good lawyer, moron and moron, to represent the witchcraft community back then. Do you have two ex-wives who are witches? And they're coming after you right now? Call Big Lou. He's like you, only he's only on wife witch number two. And then you had the witch timeshare thing. Don't even get me started on that. If you got into a timeshare with a witch back then in Salem and you tried to get out of it, good luck. You needed the timeshare witch cancellation industry. That guy had it back then. Guy was a big deal. Chuck McDowell back then, you know. I'll get you out of your witch timeshare before she can put a hex on you, and I'll even have her tried for witchcraft. I'm not an attorney, but I'm pretty sure she's going to be found guilty of witchcraft if she doesn't get you out of that timeshare. And if we don't get you out of it, you don't pay. Salem was a great time, great opportunity to be an entrepreneur back then. You know what I mean? A lot of people involved. 110,000. Holy cow. The whole community. Imagine the souvenirs back then, too. Here's CNN finding that. So in our family, we try to teach their kids, you know, respect opinions. Don't go out there and oh, you know who was around for the Salem witch trials is actually Nancy Pelosi, the vampiric one. And guess who made stock trades back then? Nancy Pelosi. No joke. Well, she's immortal because she's a vampire, the vampiric one. She was back there. She survived this, and she got very, very rich off stock trades back then. The Visa of the time was going to come under investigation. And her husband back then in the year. What year was all this? It was like 1612 or something, right? Wasn't it when they did all this?
Like the 1690s.
1692, I believe, is when it started.
1692. Yeah, so Pelosi was around back then. She was like, I got a hot tip that all the people financing the witch trial lawyers are going to be under investigation. Let's sell our stock, Pauly. True story. That's from the Salem archives. Pelosi was around then, too. See that? Just saying.
He unloaded all of his broomstick stock.
Cauldrons. He was known as the Cauldron King back then. And then the government was going to buy him, make him in China. And he unloaded all of his cauldrons and got super rich off a tip. Just amazing. CNN finding that Democrat-leaning children are 9 times more likely to have extreme political opinions than Republican-leaning children. Let's save that for Dr. Wolford Riley, shall we? Let's talk to him. I'd like to have his thoughts on that as we will have him join us next, because Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me is his book, and that kind of works with it. But I want to play this clip for you. This is a Michigan union member. They are not voting based on bogus lawfare. They know that Trump told supporters on January 6th to march peacefully and patriotically. Before I do that, let me read you an email that I got yesterday from somebody who hates me and hates the show. Let's see if I can find it here. I always love these kind of emails. Let's go to my actual. I sent it to myself so I could find it. Well, you know, let's play the clip and then I'll find the email. Go ahead.
And talk to me about your level of interest in the criminal charges and so forth.
February 6th?
January 6th.
So I remember that day. I know he was the standing president. I'm not familiar with the charges that are being brought against him for that. I'm not following that charge or the. I know there's multiple court cases going on. I'm just not familiar with it.
I mean, that doesn't sound like it's going to be a factor in deciding who to vote for.
No.
Okay, so when I say January 6th, what do you think?
Oh, I just remember seeing it on the news, like all the riots and stuff. Don't really know what it was about or what happened, though.
How did it make you feel when you saw it?
I don't know. I don't really feel any way about it. People showed their emotion, I guess. Probably in the wrong way, but it happened.
Jennifer sends me an email yesterday, and the title of the email is Lies. You are a disgraceful liar. Is there another kind of liar, by the way, besides a disgraceful liar? I'm just curious. You are a wonderful liar, or, you know, you're a joyful liar. You are a disgraceful liar. The audacity of stating there were no weapons on January 6th and that it was a riot, not an insurrection. You also repeatedly and rudely interrupt a caller who has a different belief and opinion. I am posting this publicly as well. I wrote back and said the following. Oh, no. Posting it publicly? Anything but that. Please. Just don't post it publicly. So she wrote back and said, you truly need to look at the blatant lies you are putting out there and, all caps, treat your callers, in parentheses, who have a different viewpoint. With decency and respect, the caller this afternoon was attempting to express his views, and you, in your obnoxious, loudmouth manner, just kept steamrolling over him, literally not allowing him to speak. By the way, is this Mama Zioli's secret email? I'm just curious if Jennifer might be one of Mama Zioli's code name. I'm curious. This sounds very familiar. The gall of you then stating that there were no weapons on January 6th. What universe are you living in? I'm living in the metaverse, by the way, Jennifer. One of Disney's crappy metaverse productions. Do you really think people are stupid? Just another cult member drinking his Kool-Aid, all of it. I love it. She's like, do you think people are stupid? Then she calls me a cult member and accuses me of drinking Kool-Aid and all the Kool-Aid. Hey, listen, lady, the Kool-Aid man smashed through my window, smashed through my door, broke it down. I'm suing his ass. And yeah, I'm going to drink his Kool-Aid till he fixes my house. And I'm getting more on and more on to represent me against the Kool-Aid man. So how do you like that? That's right. Please, whatever you do, don't publicly say anything negative about me. A highly successful radio host in a top 10 market with hundreds of thousands of listeners. My goodness, if people knew what we talked about on this show, what could possibly happen? All right, we got Dr. Wilfred Riley joining us next, 855-839-1210, on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli, if you'd like to post any of this publicly. We're also streaming along on YouTube. So I want to tell you that Dr. Mike Veneria, great guy, great friend of the show, and he will give you the smile of your dreams. Dental implants, that's what Dr. Mike does, and he does them better than anybody. You know, Bridget just went for a new smile. She had a beautiful smile before, but her veneers needed to be replaced, and Dr. Mike gave her beautiful new caps, and her smile looks gorgeous. Patrick just had his appointment with Dr. Mike the other day, so when I tell you he's my family's dentist, the whole family goes there, and yes, the real Mama Zeoli discovered him for our family. She's a patient, too. His number is 856-786-2020, 856-786-2020, or go to VeneriaDental.com. For 12 consecutive years, he's been recognized among his peers as a master of implant dentistry. So, if you need a dental implant, it's complicated stuff, go see Dr. Mike. And he's easy to get to. He's got two locations to serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. And dental implants, like I mentioned, since they are complicated, you don't want to go to the closest dentist. Go to the best. So go to the guy that other dentists send their patients to, and you'll get a free consultation. VeneriaDental.com. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. My buddy, my dentist, my friend, and the master of dental implants, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Dr. Wilfred Riley is as American as it gets. He's also the author of a must-read book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me, which is fantastic. I highly recommend it. I think everyone should read it. And he's my guest right now. How you doing, my friend?
Doing well. Great to be back on the show.
Great to have you. And look at you being in Am I Racist with Matt Walsh, Dr. Wilfred Riley in that movie. You're a movie star now, too.
Yeah, that was a funny movie. Like, I got a call as part of my consulting business asking if I wanted to participate in a documentary about diversity and DEI. And it was like, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, my fee is this. You know, I'm on the right politically. And, you know, you got there, and you're in Nashville, and I'm conservative, so I know the Daily Wire's in Nashville. And you see the guy that I'm talking to walk in, and it's clearly Matt Walsh in a wig. And so there was a big element of, okay, well, I know what this is, you know. But it was enjoyable. It was a funny experience. And I think, fortunately, the things that I said were mostly true, so they stood up pretty well. I obviously don't think there's any attempt to embarrass me. But, I mean, a lot of the people that were even sort of toward the center but were doing DEI consulting ended up looking pretty silly. So a funny movie. I saw it about a week ago.
Yeah, they did look pretty silly, and I guess, you know, some of them were feeling like they were duped, but they also got paid to be in the movie, so, you know,
yeah.
I mean, their check's cash, right?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, no white-collar consulting is a hard job. I mean, getting paid, you know, several hundred dollars an hour to do anything is pretty good. But, like, some of the fees, like, I couldn't help but look at them. I mean, the woman whose kid got fist-bumped at Disney World by a guy in a Goofy suit or something got $50,000. So, I mean, the DEI consulting space is a pretty rewarding one. I mean, I think Robin DiAngelo's fee was $20,000. So, you know, this hustle has been going on for a while, where these guys like Ibram Kendi will charge a local high school $40,000 to show up and talk for a day. And, I mean, there's nothing that produces. I mean, if anything, race relations get a little worse. But that's something that after BLM, a lot of people felt the need to do. So that sector really grew. Like Sayura Rao, all those people in that movie are pretty well known for owning these companies and for doing these sort of events. Like she owns a Race to Dinner, which will come to your house and tell your wife she's a racist.
Yeah. I my favorite is the one where they, you know, you pay people to come to your house and just yell at you for being a racist. That sounds like a fun Friday night. Like, sign me up. That sounds great. I'm paying you to come to my house and yell at me. I got enough yelling in my house. I don't need to pay anybody to come in and do it.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a certain demographic for masochism, and I mean, it is, I mean, I don't mean to make fun of it, but it is upper middle class, it's mostly female, not entirely, generally sort of guilty liberal, backlash to a rich father is very common. So, I mean, you kind of wonder how much, and this is the family show here, but you kind of wonder how much that plays into the willingness to hire these 2 5'11" female consultants to come into your home and scream at you about what a bigot you are.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at that event, it is exactly that demographic. And I mean, that's also pretty much what you see when people who are wearing like zip down Handmaid's Tale outfits are outdoors protesting. I mean, there's a lot psychologically you could ask about that kind of thing.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the fact that now California has apologized for slavery. I didn't realize California played such a big role in slavery, and I'm also not really sure exactly what they're apologizing for, since no one is alive who was either a slave or owned slaves. Can you help me out understand this here?
Yeah, I'm actually writing a column about that when I talk about like consulting or talking about these issues for the Pacific Research Institute right now. And I mean, the position of California there basically just comes from the fact that they're the most liberal state, and Gavin Newsom is, I think, the third most liberal governor in the country. When it comes to actual experience with slavery, California never had slaves, of course. They were never a Jim Crow state. I mean, they've had a heavily Hispanic governmental administration since the 1920s. California's 15% Asian. But for whatever reason, they've decided to apologize to the state's black residents, who in fact only make up 4.8% of the population and are one of the better off groups outside of LA. And I think it's just sort of you're jumping on that train.
Yeah.
There's no logical reason. I mean, like black Californians mostly came to California during the Great Migration to work as skilled shipbuilders. A lot of ports in California. I mean, you've seen some ugly things like the L.A. riot, but in general, they're pretty well acclimated in California. Population's 5% black. It's 5% biracial. So there's no real reason for a surge of guilt here, but they seem to be feeling one. And my last comment on this, I think that guilt is going to stop real quick when Mexican and Asian Californians realize they're being asked to actually pay money for this. Like, a lot of them are pretty woke, you know, Berkeley and all that. But,
right.
I mean, some Vietnamese doctor, when he actually reads these reparations bills, like, oh, they want a $600 million a year for this crap. I mean, that's it. Like, there's going to be a referendum, and that's going to be it. It's got to be completely gone.
Dr. Wilfred Riley is with me, the author of Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. It's the must-read book of the year, in my opinion. I absolutely loved it. I learned so much, and I think it should be in every classroom in America, too. I want to play for you this thing from CNN where they find that Democrat-leaning children are 9 times more likely to have extreme political opinions than Republican-leaning children. It's pretty crazy here. I think I can only imagine what these kids are hearing in their homes, but it probably says a lot about the current state of discourse in America. Cut number 4.
Donald Trump, he did bad things. He's like Hitler.
He only wanted to be president so that he can just control everybody.
Trump is supporting January 6th now. I remember that January 6th was a bunch of Republicans believing Trump. I feel like they thought Trump was a god. People got arrested. I think one officer died after. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, that was a big day.
The study found that these Democrat-leaning kids were about 9 times more likely to express negative emotions about Donald Trump than Republican-leaning kids were about Kamala Harris.
So, I mean, what do you make of that? I mean, in my house, we teach our kids, and we're a Republican-leaning house, as Anderson Cooper put it, to appreciate all opinions. And I don't sit around the table trashing Kamala Harris at night around my children. So what do you make of that, Dr. Riley?
I'm not I'm not surprised by that. I mean, so in terms of actual research, there for a long time, there's been a lot of writing about what's called authoritarianism or the potential for fascism. And the assumption has always been that this is a problem on the right. You know, Theodore Adorno wrote The Authoritarian Personality now almost 80 years ago, 1950, this kind of thing. But the reason that we thought that in the social sciences, we actually just messed up. And academics who tend to lean very left were only asking people questions that would trigger people on the right. Like, do you think society should control communists? And a couple of years ago, a young guy at Emory University just reversed the question. So he started asking, like, do you think society should control anti-maskers? January 6ers, this kind of thing. And what he found was that on average, leftists are more authoritarian than conservatives. I think it's a fair way to pitch his latest research, which shouldn't really surprise anyone when you think back to Stalin and Lenin and Mao and so on down the line. But one other thing about this, they also found that the more authoritarian someone on the left was, the more they thought they were a non-authoritarian good person. So, like, tough soldiers on the right are pretty open to just saying, like, look, I'm a tough soldier on the right. Like, throw them out of helicopters. I'll say that to my priest. I don't think it's good. People on the left tend to believe that they're advancing some kind of, like, higher order or new way. So they're only doing what they absolutely have to do. They're actually much more frightening. And it doesn't surprise me that people who have that kind of perspective are talking to these young children about politics and so on. I would get the impression that in probably your household or mine, like most sort of center-right, typical Republican households, you don't really talk with seven-year-olds a lot about politics.
No, I don't. It's the last thing I talk about with my kids. Really.
I think it's extremely healthy, but I mean, like, when you refer to the Matt Walsh movie, I mean, there's a scene in there that goes on for like 15 minutes where he's talking to one of the leading diversity consultants in the country, and she's saying, well, I have all these problems with race because I'm trying to raise my kids in this tradition, but that brings with it all these issues. Like, for example, can my white daughter dress as Moana? And I think that people who worry about this kind of thing are actually really likely to do stuff like take their kids to pro-abortion marches or, you know, sit them down when Donald Trump's on the television and say, that's the bad man mommy doesn't like, and explain why and so on. And my own opinion would be that that comes out of what we've seen, this vein of left-wing authoritarianism where people feel like they're saving the world. That's one take. And also, I mean, take two, obviously, is that this is bad. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, and I think, and I love take one, because I don't think that is expressed enough, this idea of authoritarianism on the left and fascism, which is also somehow equated to the right, and that concept is I don't understand how that gets asserted with the right when it's a strong centralized government. And as conservatives, we always talk about trying to get the federal government out of everything. So I've never really understood that either. But I'm sure within the book I'm holding in my hands, my formerly pangolin-stained fingers, lies my liberal teacher told me. We can understand some of that. I got the book here. We're streaming live on YouTube, Dr. Riley, and hopefully we can do that with you going forward in the future.
But, of course.
You have a chapter here. It's a bonus. It's chapter 10, the continuing oppression narrative. And we're hearing some of this as we get closer to election time, the continuing oppression narrative. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of people that make money off that. Let's talk about that, shall we?
Yeah, so the continuing oppression narrative, I mean, that began almost as a slick acronym. It breaks down to CON, but it's one of the key things. I mean, it does. But it's one of the key things that's going on in society today. An incredible amount of modern social science is focused on the idea that the world is still a terribly bad place, not just in sort of spiritual ways or something like that, which is arguable, but in terms of the things that we used to fight about. Like, there's still a great deal of racism, a great deal of sexism. And when you try to measure that empirically, which is what I do and which is pretty skillfully done, you don't find that at all. Like, if you just ask people, how do you feel about interracial marriage, you find that 96% of people, using the metric we used to use, aren't racist. So this has led to this whole sort of attempt to find something that can serve as a proxy for racism, because racism is what a Kendi or a D'Angelo would use to explain every problem in the black community, for example. And there are a bunch of different attempts to do this. There's what's called stereotype threat. Minority test scores are low because we're scared of taking tests. Microaggressions. People are frightened by being asked where they're from. You know, police genocide, the BLM idea that they're cops shooting young brothers every day. In reality, we both said the number of unarmed black men killed by police in a typical year is 12. But, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Yeah. And I wrote a chapter of the book where I break down all these ideas, like interracial crime. There's not a lot of black and white interracial crime either, but interracial crime of the kind we see on TV, police, George Zimmerman, all of that is 2% of crime. Actual interracial crimes about 90% black on white. So I just go through all these claims that people are making, like police murder, interracial crime, cultural appropriation, which doesn't exist, so on, so on, so on, and say, like, this is very questionable. Most of this is nonsensical.
Hey, by the way, I had on the show yesterday Jeff Yass. I'm sure you know the name. He's the richest man in Pennsylvania, and he's a big school choice proponent. His idea, which is, you know, you take the money that the state's paying and you divide that in half. You use half to educate the kid now, put the other half in an account, a savings account, and it's, you know, that's his plan, which is great. He was talking about the margins, you know, being so close in a state like Pennsylvania, for example, and saying, you know, school choice could be that dividing point where you could get extra votes from, say, black voters because, hey, they, you know, they support school choice and that Republicans should be embracing this. I heard Donald Trump say it the other day in Indiana, Pennsylvania, universal school choice. But I think he's got a point there, which is that. And his critique was Republicans don't talk about it enough. When you're dealing with razor thin margins and you've got people that support this policy who happen to be black, and you know, I mean, Kamala Harris may win the black vote, but it's not about winning the vote. It's about undercutting that black vote in order for the Republican to win. It seems like it makes sense to go out there and push that strategy.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about that strategy of sort of racial division in general.
Well, just a school choice is just saying, like, make it a forefront of the Republican platform, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with that. So I think this goes both ways. Like, yeah, I think that one of the reasons we hear so much about racism and so on is what you call instrumental. So I don't know how many people actually believe the United States of today is as racist as it was in 1956. Like, I can't see an African-American academic professor actually thinking that's true. But if racism is what you've decided is the only possible explanation for all of the issues in black communities or in poor communities, you're not going to talk about fathers, so on, you have to find racism. I think that's part of it. And that also gets into politics, because, I mean, when you look at some of these things, like in Arizona today, I read that Donald Trump is polling at 29% among black men. That's not crazy, but a lot of black men are planning on voting for Trump. If that ever happened nationally, the Democratic Party is done for three elections. There's no way to win. So the emphasis on those people are going to put you back in chains, which is something Joe Biden's actually said, all of that is really used politically. I mean, Biden has this whole running lie in one of his speeches where he says, you know, it was when I looked at the things Trump was saying about Charlottesville and about black people that I decided to run for office. And it's that's so untrue that it's known as the very fine people hoax. Like, there's no way Mr. Biden doesn't have advisors that told him that's just bull. But it plays really well at black churches. Like, I mean, I've heard recordings of that, seen black audiences kind of go off to it. So that's part of it. The Republicans, yeah, in response, I don't see a reason at all not to emphasize things like school choice. The only question, and I think it will be pretty effective. I think President Trump has been good with this. I mean, I think there are a lot of actual black candidates, Byron Daniels, that have been, or Donald, that have been good with this. But, I mean, to the extent you're going to get votes, yeah, you would want to pitch things that would be good for people in sort of working class, especially in minority communities. And I think you are starting to see more of a working class, diverse coalition coming together on the right. I mean, like, Trump's throwing rap concerts right now. So, I mean, they're getting packed houses. Yeah. So I do think you're seeing some transition there.
Yeah, and Kamala Harris, by the way, is going with that Charlottesville hoax, we will talk more about that as time goes on. All right, get the book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. Wilfred Riley, he's the man. Give us your Twitter handle one time for me, please.
My Twitter handle is Will Da Beast, so it's at Will, W-I-L, _DA_Beast, B-E-A-S-T. sort of an old hip-hop neighborhood thing, but I've had it since I got on Twitter, so look for me there.
All right, I'll tweet something he said, and then you can follow him. But get the book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. I appreciate it, my friend.
Sounds good. Always glad to come on. Bye.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, quick break. Our fourth and final hour is straight ahead. I got a lot for you, including the latest on these illegal immigration numbers, Trump's meeting with Zelensky, and Pennsylvania voter integrity. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.